surrender, surrender, surrender to what is. At this moment, only this moment, let's say your outer circumstances are not the best at this moment. You've just been thrown out of your home. You lost your job. You've nothing in your, no money in your pocket, and there you are. What do you do now? How can you not dislike this moment? Easy. You're breathing, and you look around. Sky, bird, people, cars. Feel the inner body. And you become, you say yes to this moment. Not to a story that your mind is inventing about this moment. People confuse that here. When I say yes to what is, people think, okay, then I have to say, okay, I have to accept that I'm a homeless person now, that I have no prospects, that I've thrown away all that I had, or people have taken it away from me. Blah, blah, blah. Stories. No. That's just a story. I'm ruined. I'm ruined. I've no nothing. No, you're not ruined. You have 1.50 in your pocket. That's the reality. I'm ruined is the mental addition to the reality, which is a story. So what is your mental addition to the reality of now? And you'd be amazed what people add to the simplicity of now. The baggage they put onto the simplicity of now with their stories, which sometimes they've carried over from 10 years, 20 years, 30 years of stories, inflicted on the now, or whoever you're meeting in the now, or what is happening in the now, and people carry that baggage, and life gets heavier and heavier. No, what do you need a story for? Just come to the simplicity of this moment, just this. And then it's fine. So we are stepping out of story by accepting the simplicity of this moment. And that means you become aligned with the power of life itself, which is not stupid. Which is because it's intelligence itself. It's out of it, the entire universe comes out of it. And you're aligned with that, and then suddenly even the external life flows with much greater ease. But that's not why you're doing it. It's not a means to an end. It's an end in itself. Surrender to the present moment as it is. If it's unpleasant, you don't need stories, but there is such a thing as unpleasantness, because you could be cold and hungry. I experienced a short time of not having a home and sitting around on park benches. Fortunately, I was already comfortable with the present moment, so it was extremely enjoyable. Something that other people might have said, it's a dreadful experience. So you have always the two levels in you. The level of the person who goes about its business. But it's very easy to get trapped in that dimension only. So you're going to an important meeting. Let's say, okay, you've graduated from being homeless, now you got a good job. You're going to an important meeting, traveling, and you're talking to the lawyers about the contracts and this and that. There's a big project happening, it's all so important, and you get so absorbed. That everything becomes absolutely important. What is relative only becomes absolute. You get lost in the world. And very soon you're in a state of resistance because you need to get there. But the contract hasn't been done yet and there's a time limit. Don't you know you should get yourself together? Everybody, these days, everything is deadline. There's never anything that people ask me to do that doesn't have a deadline. But it has to be done by Monday, tomorrow, next week. But it has to be ready by, we have deadlines. Most deadlines I don't meet, so people don't even expect deadlines to be met anymore. When they tell me we have a deadline, they already know. And I suspect now they give me false deadlines. If they need it in 4 months' time, they say they need it in 2 weeks. So the world, which is the human mind, and the things of the world can absorb you totally. So is it possible for you to always come back into the other dimension? And that is a beautiful practice. So you're sitting in the office, this person is talking, that person is talking, or you're driving somewhere, the important meeting. And there's a moment when you feel your inner body. There's a moment when you look up at this tree. There's a moment when you breathe, take one conscious breath. There's a moment when you step out of that stream of the world into now. And that becomes so enjoyable that more and more often that dimension is there in your life. Stepping out of the story. And there you are in the lawyer's office discussing divorce proceedings with your husband or wife. And you're looking out of the window. And see, there's a beautiful tree, but you don't even call it a beautiful tree. You just see. And there's not only a tree, you can feel the very presence in which the tree arises. And the lawyer is talking about this or that, and you look, ah. And then you look back to the lawyer and say, okay, do what you have to do, and then you look back at, take a conscious breath. You're continuously stepping out of the stream that wants to absorb your attention completely into the space of now. So you're bringing space into your life. You're bringing space into your life also by accepting, this is surrender, accepting what is brings space, because by saying yes to what arises in the present moment, you become the space for it, which you already are, but didn't know, couldn't feel it, couldn't know that you are the space for the world. By saying yes to the things of that arise now, you become powerful, but not in the sense of ego power, not powerful over somebody or something else, but in the sense that the power of life itself is now able to fully flow through you. The power of consciousness itself. Because we have two movements in this world, in a human being. One is the outgoing movement into form that has its place. In everybody, that's the outgoing movement that wants to strengthen and preserve the form of me. And there's nothing wrong with that if you know also the other dimension, which goes the opposite way. It's the need to be connected to the formless vastness of being that is also in you, that is essentially who you are. So there is this, every human life needs to be a balance between form and the depths of formlessness. Otherwise, and the whole world is lost in form. So the dimension, which is the sacred dimension, which is the spiritual dimension, whatever you want to call it, to a large extent in the world, modern culture is completely lacking. It's dreadfully unbalanced, dreadfully unhappy, dreadfully insane. And if humans do not encounter this within themselves now, then simply these forms will no longer be useful in the universe, or the human race would, as if it had never happened. And then the wind blows over the planet, and the animals are suddenly very happy. And all the plants give a sigh of relief. Oh, wow, what was that? Could happen. Doesn't have to happen, but it could happen. At the moment, the humans are so heavy and unenlightened, it's a dreadful burden on the planet. The planet is only just, the planet, of course, is an organism which also is an expression of the one consciousness. It has its own consciousness, which is an expression of the one consciousness. So it's only beginning to realize now what the humans are doing, because the planet is a little bit slower, and on the planetary scale, the humans have only been here for a few minutes. So the planet is only just going, what is going on here? What can I do to get rid of these? Maybe I'll raise the temperature, have a little fever. That's how the human body gets rid of bacteria. Fever, that might work. Or should I make them infertile? That would be the easiest. Now, it's a new, when you become free of the illusion that the conditions of the world, whatever happens to you, that they are here to satisfy you. That things should always go the way you want them to go. The conditions are here to bring me fulfillment. It's a big delusion. Conditions are here to challenge you, to frustrate you, and to wake you up. So instead of seeking better and better conditions, you accept the condition of this moment. And paradoxically, that's when very quickly even the outer conditions that are not all that important improve, because power of life moves through you fully now. So that's a practice, the practice of surrender, in which you become very effective. You don't become ineffective through surrender, which is a misconception. Surrender says, right, this is what is, and I might as well say yes to it. I'm verbalizing it, but true surrender, there's no words. It's just, you look at the situation, what is, you perceive, you look, you become the presence. There's a consciousness. You're aware of yourself as consciousness. That's the little secret of self-realization. Space, stillness, consciousness. And you can feel is not the right word, there is no right word. In the background of all that happens, you can feel yourself as the presence in which it happens. We could call that there is a stillness in the background. It's not the stillness of being dead, it's a vitally alive stillness. Here things happen, and there's the, oh. You're no longer reactive, responsive. If something needs to be done, yes. but not reactive. So the question is, can you, at this moment, be aware not only of all the things that are taking place right here, externally and internally, but can you also be aware of yourself as the awareness in which these things happen, which is not a thought, nothing to do with thinking. It's a sensing of an aliveness in the background, of things happening in the foreground. And when I say things happening, that includes thoughts, thinking. Thinking happens in the foreground. But when you're aware of the background as your very own presence, I say your own because it is essentially who you are. It is being. It is the I am, which is timeless. The timeless sense of being in the background. I am, being. I am and being are the same word. To be, I am. First person singular of the verb to be, I am. It is being. Can you sense the very being that you are, and on that level you are one with all beings? This is the level of non-differentiation. And it is that level from where true love comes, true compassion comes, only when you can feel yourself as the underlying I am presence. Now, you can only do it now. Because it is now. It is the now in essence. So that's where freedom lies. Freedom from conditions. Conditions will carry on, coming and going, some good, some bad. And that's also where creativity comes in, because through that, the very intelligence that is the I am may manifest through you. That's secondary thing. What it manifests, I don't know. It varies from person to person. What does not vary from person to person is that which underlies the person. That is where the oneness is of all beings. And from there, when you sense that, you can look at a forest and sense, if you go to an ancient forest and sense the sacredness of the forest in yourself, the very presence that you are, you feel is the very same beingness that is the life in the trees. You feel the life, the one life, because you are the one life. And in whatever manifestation you see the one life, it manifests in billions of forms. In whatever manifestation you see the one life, you recognize it as yourself. And only then can you sense the essence of the forest, or the essence of an animal, or the essence of another human being. And only then is there true connection, and more than connection, a realization of oneness. And it's only then that humans are no longer compelled to fight each other continuously. That's the madness. If you are cut off from that, everything is alien to you. Everything is other, because you only have the form. So there can be no love, there can be no empathy, there no compassion, no softness. And when you look at a forest, you say, How much does it cost? If we cut all the trees, what will we get? You can't see anything else. Forgive them, for they know not what they do. They don't know who they are. That's why they don't know what they do. So that is the fundamental dysfunction in humans, and it's fine. That too is part of the evolution of human consciousness. The shift in consciousness that is happening is a movement from predominantly thinking human beings to predominantly aware human beings. For several thousand years, humans have been completely identified with the movement of think, of thought. That's how the ego came into being. Alienation, separation, all illusions come into being. Since it happened, it was a necessary stage in the evolution, and we are coming to the end of that stage. Because thinking keeps you trapped in form, because every thought is a thought form. And most human beings are compulsive thinkers, because their sense of identity is derived from the movement of thought. They cannot let go of thinking, because to them it would be equivalent to dying. Who am I if I do not keep reminding myself of myself and my story and my life? My life. It's my life. That's a big, it's a huge illusion, just those two words. How can you? Do I have life? Then there's life and there's me. If I have life, there's life and me, and I could lose it, and then all that's left is me. No, that can't be right. I have life. That's what people think. They have a life. But of course, it's an illusion created by thought. They're separating themselves from life and say, this is life and that's me. I am life. There's no life apart from I. So since I am life, how can I lose life? I am a temporary expression in this form, fleeting, of the one formless life. So thinking is compulsive for most humans, and it is an addiction. The great addiction, much greater than drugs, is the addiction to thinking, most of which is not only unnecessary, but represents an enormous burden and heaviness in your life. So all of you who are still here are ready to make that shift, which for most people is gradual, for very few it's sudden, the shift from continuously having to think to experiencing gaps in the stream of thinking. And not, I'm not talking necessarily about when you're meditating. Meditation is wonderful for those who feel drawn to meditation. Not everybody may feel drawn to meditation. Main spiritual practice is daily life, even for meditators. No matter how good you are at meditation, 3 hours a day, 4 hours a day, don't need to move. Even the Buddhist monks are impressed when you can sit for 2 hours. Some Westerners have enormous willpower. Of course, that's not true meditation, but true meditation is, of course, wonderful. But the main spiritual practice is daily life, as you go about your daily life. And it is there where you experiment with meeting situations rather than through thinking, through awareness. Which means there are periods in your life when you're doing things without the movement of thought that accompanies either what commenting on what you're doing or experiencing, or some completely different matter. While you're doing this, you're thinking about that. There are moments when you can move across the room, go to the bathroom, open the door, go to the wash basin, wash your hands, dry your hands, and not a single thought has crossed your mind. But you were not lost. You were present with every movement, but it happened in a field of stillness. And if that's too long, then less. Putting some honey in the tea. No thought. And the spoon goes back in the saucer. Or you stir, and while you stir your tea, there's a clear space of awareness. Why do you have to fill that with some kind of thinking? It's not profitable, it doesn't help you in any way. If there is something that you need to apply thought to, then you apply thought. But there's a vast amount of things that actually you can tackle and be with much greater intelligence if you do not apply thought, but you apply awareness. Awareness means you look at a situation. There's a misconception about what intelligence is, because we equate intelligence with the movement of thought and the ability to, through thought, dissect situations, analyze, label it, remember the labels, see how labels are related to other labels, and so on. There is a deeper intelligence out of which all creativity comes, which is non-conceptual. And that in our educational system is completely unrecognized. There are many children at school who would operate wonderfully on the non-conceptual level, and they are called slow or even stupid, because they do not have a highly developed conceptual intelligence, they have a deeper intelligence. That is where creativity comes from. Albert Einstein, after graduating, was the only person in his class who couldn't get a job. He was a bit slow. Of course, to be deep, you have to be slow. But in this, in our civilization, everything is far. What's the answer to this? What's that? What's that? Quick, give me the answer. So you remain on the surface. You dance around on the surface of life. You never go any... To go deeper, you have to come still for a moment, and there's an awareness, and you look at a situation. And then, if something needs to be said or done, the words come, but they come from a deeper level. Every therapist who is effective, or anybody who works with people, You can only be effective if you come from awareness, if you bring awareness to this, not through thought. It's miraculous, even the most conceptual schools of therapy, let's say you're a psychoanalyst, you learn a lot of stuff about the human mind and you apply it. And often those psychoanalysts who become effective after 10 or 15 or 20 years, they suddenly get tired of applying their, continuously applying what they have learned, and they're simply with the patient in a space of awareness. So it is our practice, as much as possible, think when you have to think and see if you can be free of thinking as much as possible in your daily life, which is in many, many situations. And of course, one thing that helps enormously in being free of thinking is to say yes to the present moment, because a lot of the compulsion to think arises out of the denial of what is. And so through thought, you want to destroy or run away from, you judge the present moment, you run to get away from it, you create fantasy world so that you get away from this, and so on. So that's already a great help, as that primordial practice that I described, becoming one with what is, so that you are the space, and the space is thoughtless. The space is awareness. This is the rising level of consciousness in you. So you have, on the surface, the mind created me. And then you have something coming up from underneath, pushing, which is awareness. The new consciousness wants to come through. Sometimes it comes through the gaps in this thinking stream. Ah. And suddenly you feel more alive. There's a peace, but an alive peace, alert, unburdened by the little me and its problems. Don't carry that around anymore. So your practice, when you're on the bus, in the tube, walking from here to there, doing this or that, just aware, but not thinking. And it doesn't matter how long. The length doesn't matter, the frequency is more important. How often you allow a gap in the stream of thinking. And the gap doesn't need to be long. Just shh. And so you become, it's like the density of mind lessens because gaps are appearing in the mind. And so you become actually more intelligent. We can call it, that's a title by a book by Krishnamurti, The Awakening of Intelligence. And really, that's what it is. True intelligence comes in, which is not the ability to solve IQ tests. That is a small aspect of intelligence, but not intelligence itself. Now, there may be some of you who are very good at IQ tests and who feel offended right now. And that's fine, because perhaps some of your identity was built on the fact that you have a very high IQ. If that's the case and you feel some inner, that can't be right, then you observe that. I don't have that problem because I have never undergone an IQ test, but I am absolutely sure the result would not be very good. My mind just doesn't work that way. Yesterday I picked up where I'm staying, my friend's house, there's a book on Sudoku. I picked it up, I looked at the simplest one at the very beginning, for 5 minutes, completely meaningless, can't do it. And the most beautiful thing is, if you can meet other human beings, whether it's a brief encounter, or a longer encounter, or especially in your relationship, predominantly through being aware rather than think, relate through awareness rather than thinking. What does that look like in practice? Somebody comes to you and says something. While you listen, there is this space. You're listening, you're bringing space to it. You're not preparing what you're going to say or commenting on what the other person is saying, or thinking about something totally different, or trying to get out what you want to get out and say, but simply be there as awareness, a space of awareness. And there's a clarity, and this is where a human relationship deepens. There's no depths in relationship that are completely mind-dominated. They're all thinking. And then it's so easy to get drawn into that, especially when more than two humans come together, the mind energy starts working, and you get drawn, it's like a stream that carries you along. And then he said, and then, wow, I can't believe, you know what he did then? And then, can't get out of it anymore. It's for you to represent, be there, as and bring a different dimension to human interaction. And that dimension is not some new thought. Of course, it's better to have a good thought than a bad thought. But go deeper and have no thought. And so, awareness replaces thinking. And where you still need to think, actually your thinking will be much more focused and powerful because you're not wasting the mental abilities in useless thinking. It now can become focused. So that is the practice of being free of mental noise. Be there, and when you are aware, you are not a person anymore. You are only a person when you are dominated by thought, because the person consists of thought. When you are aware, you are there as not a person, but a deeper presence. And this is what the world needs. It doesn't need more clever persons. It doesn't need for you to become more knowledgeable or even better as persons. Many persons have very good intentions. They say, I want to become a better person. Of course, that's better than wanting to become a worse person. But it doesn't quite work. Many people who are trying to be good people often do bad things and say, how could I have done that? I wanted to be a good person. And I shouted at him again. So it's not improving the person that you are, but going beyond the person. That's where the goodness, true goodness, comes through you. And then you become compassionate towards yourself also and towards the limitations of your little person. It's never going, as a person, you're not going to be perfect. There will be shortcomings, this or that. That's fine. This, it's form. You have your, but the non-personal dimension is coming in more and more into your life.